Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you with the compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated, as has become a national pastime on Sundays. Devron, you refer the presentation, the initial presentations from the representatives of the PDP, Solutions Barbados, and UPP. What is your assessment of what you have heard? What kind of political context do you put them in, and what do you think represents the whole phenomenon of the third parties in Barbados?
Thank you again, Glenn. Well, I heard quite a bit. Much was mentioned along the lines of the need for the intellectual space and broadening the intellectual space and differences in philosophy and holding government accountable. Now, these are certainly all laudable initiatives, but at the end of the day, the purpose of a political party is to form a government. And if you're not in a position to do that, then really and truthfully, then you become a pressure group as opposed to a political party. So the
would you like to explain what is technically a pressure group?
Well, a pressure group, comparatively to a political party, is essentially a group that has a very sectional interest or a very particular interest. Mr. Phillips spoke, for instance, about his work in the non-political realm. You could say that that was a pressure group. It has a very specific agenda, whereas a political party now has a broader agenda, and it brings in multiple individuals, multiple perspectives, and multiple avenues with the sole intent to become the government and the sole intent to govern. Anything else would be a pressure group. And we have to understand the context and the political context that alternative parties or emerging parties, as Mr. Atherley said, have to face. And it's almost like a proverbial David situation, but without the slingshot, as Barbados would say, without the gutta perch. They're up against many aspects within a political system that do not work in their favor. For instance, electorally, you have an electoral system, the first past the post system, where it's only concerned about the winner. There is no runner-up and there is no alternative. As long as you got 50% of the vote plus one vote, you are the winner. No matter how well you did electorally, if you're not the winner, you don't get to represent that constituency. So that is one of the fundamental difficulties that third parties have as it relates to our political context, the inability to be elected because all other votes are discounted after the winner has been declared. So structurally, that's problematic. Then you also have to look at our culture as well. There are many individuals within our society who are heavily dependent on government and heavily dependent and reliant on political parties, and that's a reality. So there are many individuals who expect a level of patronage. And if you don't have the ability to essentially make a call and get someone a job, these are very practical realities and truths. If you don't have the ability to make a call and get someone a job in government or the private sector, or when election time comes around, what people consider the goodies of election are, well, quite frankly, what is vote buying? If you don't have that ability to garner votes, then quite frankly, you're unable to attract the necessary electoral energy to be elected, because at the end of the day, individuals will vote for a government. They vote in order for their political party to win because they expect some level of return, whether physically, whether philosophically, whether something of that nature. And that is one of the practical realities that we have to address, and that's one of the problems that third parties seem to have. They don't have the inner workings of government that they can essentially bring about the necessary change to persons' lives who are dependent on government.
That's what they call the advantage of incumbency.
The advantage of incumbency, precisely. And not only incumbency, but also you have a history of an alternative party, which will be the second party, being able to achieve government or capturing government. So you at least have that history, whereas third parties do not have that. And finally, I would add that the parliamentary system is not designed for third parties. And that's one of the fundamental things we have to understand. There is a high concentration of power in the hands of the winning political party. Now, there's certainly room for oppositions. Oppositions, our official oppositions, certainly have the Senate appointments, they get to chair the PAC, etc. But in essence, after the winning government, well, the winning party and the alternative party, which is the opposition. There's no room constitutionally for a third party. There's nothing in our constitution that grants them any level of power, and the power is concentrated in the hands of the winning party because they get to chair cabinet. So that is some, or those are rather, are some of the fundamental issues that third parties face. The electoral system, the political culture, and the parliamentary system, quite frankly, ignores them.
If I may interject blindly, Julie.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
I certainly want to reject the label of pressure group or merely interest group attaching to the PDP. I want to establish clearly in the minds of those who hear us that the PDP is not a pressure group or an interest group. The PDP, whether we like it or not, whether we like how it came about or not, now has one member sitting in the lower house of parliament and two members sitting in the upper house of parliament. Now, political parties seek to pursue an electoral purpose, and we have. Our results and outcome from the last St. George North by-election was dismal, disappointing, and poor. We accept that. We understand the realities associated with that particular situation, and we're aware of what went down there. We anticipated not necessarily coming near to win the seat, but we participated. Now, political parties such as the PDP, right now with the way the Parliament of Barbados is configured, you got 21 members of the Senate, 12 of whom are named by the Prime Minister, 7 of whom are named by Her Excellency, and 2 of whom are named by the Leader of the Opposition. We have one member in the Lower House of Parliament. The PDP now, therefore, has the balance of power in the political configuration of the Barbados Parliament, constitutional configuration of the Barbados Parliament, and therefore we are in a position politically to affect policy. I ask you, going back on the experience of the 2 years past and reflecting on that, has the PDP been able, through its 3 members, Senator Franklin, Senator Drakes, and humbly may I suggest myself, been able to affect policy positions intended by the government? The opposition, as it now is constituted in the Parliament of Barbados, helps to scrutinize government policy and program and ensure accountability. I ask, reflecting on the last 2 years, have we achieved any of that? Political parties, if they are serious and significant, lend to the development of democracy. I ask, if we reflect on the last 2 years, has PDP in a small way helped with the effort of preserving the practice of democracy in Barbados? Political parties do play a very important role, Glenn, in providing legitimate and peaceful avenues for protest and dissent in Barbados. And I think in the last 2 years, with all that has been happening around the workers of Barbados, one of the things that's helped to keep the lid and the valve on things, so such that we've not had a social explosion, is the fact that the PDP has had a parliamentary presence in both the lower house and in the upper house, and a voice in the public arena in Barbados. There's several things which Bruce has said and with which I agree that constitutes serious dynamics, which would suggest that there's going to be a lack of support for emerging parties. But that same two-party system, of which we are aware, has been one of the dynamics that has conduced to voter apathy in Barbados. And that's why we're seeing declining numbers of voters coming to the polls. Let's lose St. George North by election. We may refer to that and say it's a COVID situation. But the fact of the matter is, even the government with its 30 seats in Parliament won an election in which the numbers really were not substantially increased beyond what we would have expected. So it's a problem. We have a disadvantage in terms of lack of resources, finances, human resources, equipment, and even rules with respect to broadcasting and even advertising. There's the dynamic of intimidation and fear among people who want to associate themselves with emerging parties, because our culture shows up the situation where if you are in government, especially you have the numbers today, or if you have a leader who is so disposed, I'm not saying that is the case, I want to be careful with my words. If you have a leader that's so disposed, the heavy hand of fear sits over people and they feel a sense of intimidation and a fear of victimization. I can tell you, Glenn, without fear of contradiction, I spoke to an individual in this country about doing something, an activity in relation to PDP, not to come before the public, just to talk with PDP people about a certain particular policy orientation. And that person, a millionaire, was expressing a fear of victimization and a sense of being intimidated by the government of the day. This is a person with means, blind. So imagine the average Joe out there who is doing his job, minding his business, but wants to contribute to national policy and public debate and national development, but cannot do so because there's a sense of fear of victimization. We cannot discount the importance. Who said it? I'm going to quit. There's much more I can say, but the prominence of elitist interests around the status quo of two-party system in Barbados.
Yes.
Can I go to Raquel this time and change the order somewhat? Raquel, could you give us an insight into the experience of the UPP in this regard in reaction to how Darren has analyzed the situation? What's your response to that?
My experience is not much different from what Devron said. The barriers to an emerging political party becoming established are, as he pointed out, yes, there's a culture of a two-party system, and there's also, it is reinforced in media, both the social media and the traditional media. People are dismissive. And that helps to shape the public perception. And yes, of course, there's not a lot of constitutional space because there's no provision for a multi-party system. One of the main things that would make a multi-party system immediately viable, of course, is proportional representation. And because we have the first-past-the-post system, it's a very difficult task for third parties to emerge successfully in an election. And I agree to some extent that the point of a political party is to win the government. And therefore, it seems an insurmountable task to start with zero financing, zero marketing, zero supporters, and try to build your way into winning the government. And of course, I left a major political party where I was very involved, very actively involved. And I can see the differences when it comes to the marketing, the finances, and the way we seek to carve out a niche in the UPP versus the resources that were available to a major party. So yes, that is a concern. And perhaps the biggest, the largest barrier, the most significant barrier is access to financing. And here I would have to say that I can agree with Joe to a large extent when it comes to intimidation, because the financiers are afraid to support emerging parties. They're afraid.
Because they think that would mean that, did you get the impression that that would mean that they have, that might inhibit their access to further patronage from government, contracts, consultancies, etc.?
Of course, they believe that. And I mean, I always had the experience that financiers used to support, say we have, when we were in the two-party system and the emerging parties weren't really active that much, and even is a two-party system, and you had a lot of financiers that you know they would give equally to the two parties, and they would say, well, they're not showing any favor. And then of course there will be some that you would know would support your political party, so they might give a little bit more even though they would support both. Of course, now when you're speaking to them in the context of a multi-party system, they're like, we can't afford to support every party equally. We just can't. And we can't afford to show favor. Working, again, in the political arena, of course, you have to deal with financing and you have to deal with that. And overtly sometimes, and not overtly, people make it known that they're not giving you money for you to buy bubbles. It is for a political purpose, and you know you're not going to win. So
what would be the purpose that they would be looking for?
Exactly, they want political patronage. They want land rezoned. They want concessions to their industry. They want something done, and the finances will be tied to that. Any third party now, you are faced with, you cannot make the promises that the major parties can make, because is not very likely that you are going to win. But then also you run the, you have a situation where if you make those promises, then you would have betrayed the whole point of being a third party, because if you do get the financing from the traditional sources and you do win, then you can't make the changes that you want to make. You are going to have to go and do the same thing the other two parties doing, because you have to make the commitment to the financiers. So
thank you, Rishan. Yeah, go ahead. If you can wrap up now so we can get an input from Granville before we go to the phones. Can you wrap up now and then I go to Granville?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying. In the third parties, you are still caught in that bind. Even if you just want to be a pressure group, whatever you want to be, if you make the promises and get the commitment to the financing, then when
you'd be defending your own purpose of existence.
Yes, exactly. So what is there to do?
Thank you. Thank you, Raquel. Granville, what's your reaction to Devron's evaluation and also what you've heard from your colleagues?
Yes, well, part of Devron's evaluation was refreshingly honest. Even Raquel's explanations, I'm not sure if Dennis is cutting it out because it's so honest.
No, everything has gone clear.
Everything is gone. Yeah, well, please. That's good. But Devron... But Devron has made the same fatal mistake that his academic colleagues continue to make.
And such as?
The lazy media continue to make. And that is being dismissive of Solutions Barbados. I explained that...
Barbados or of third parties?
No, it's mostly Solutions Barbados.
I'll tell you.
I just explained that I started in the year 2000. I had 2 years president of Barbados Association of Professional Engineers, where I represented the interests of engineers at a policy level. Engineers. Then after that, it was 2 years as president. This is very important. Please please. This is important because Devron missed it.
Transition from special interest.
I understand. That's it. He did not get the transition. He did not get it because I said 2 years representing the policy decisions of engineers. Then 2 years representing 25 professional associations and other non-professional associations. That's about 5,000 members. In service industries. And then after that, it was Solutions Barbados representing the entire economy. This is education, law, infrastructure, everything. Because we were given advice.
I'm not trying to be dismissive. You're saying that you failed to make the transition from those special interest representation interests to politics, to political institution?
Wrong. I'm saying that in the first 2 years, in the year 2000, it was limited to engineering. Then after 2 years...
Yeah, but we have to get to the point where you enter politics. Tell us about how...
Yes, that's it. That's what I said when it came to Solutions Barbados. No, that was when it was the entire economy and the entire society. So in Solutions Barbados, the focus was the entire economy and the entire society, not limited to any specific area, not limited to being a pressure group, if you will, during my first 2 years as president. That was pressure. Right? Yes. That was being a pressure group, but not when we started Solutions Barbados. So that is a lie, and it continues to be taught and purported by media and academics because they are just too lazy to ask me.
Granville, before being disparaging towards others, as you don't want to be dismissive of you, you should not be dismissive of
others. No, but I've had it for five years.
You will have a chance to further represent your case. Now, can we go to, Dennis, can we go to take our first call for the
morning? Yeah, but let me, I haven't responded yet.
It's down to brass tacks. Can I have the first call, please? Hello, Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Come in, sir. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to the panel. What I would like to say is this here. We got a discussion today about the third parties and the viability in the context of the landscape of politics in Barbados. Now, we've had our Walton Bar forming the Democratic Labour Party in the early 40s and 50s.
1955.
Right.
1955, right.
Yeah, he became successful largely because of the fact that there was no alternative, and the what he had proposed captured the imagination of the electorate at that time. The second person really that we could talk about would be Mr. Haynes. But Mr. Haynes had a long standing of what we call certain achievements in Barbados. And he was seen as probably the real successor to Earl Barr. So when he defected from the Democratic Labour Party and he formed his party, if you remember, he was the only person that was elected. But let me cast my mind to this. Suppose when he made that decision to leave the Democratic Labour Party, and let me just call some names just randomly. But let me see, they had a Carl Williams and Annie Wilson and certain people within the society that was business people or whatever. He would have done a lot better than what he did. As a matter of fact, I believe he would capture a lot of votes.
But if I may just ask a question, sir. Do you realize that in the political history of Barbados and sociology of Barbados, that there's been at the grassroots level, at the general public, that there's been a traditionally such a suspicion about a political party which is supposed to represent the masses, the working class, getting too close or involved with business persons? You recognize that?
Well, you are correct in saying that. But what I'm really getting at is this point. Long gone are the days, you know, we are called a corned beef and biscuit society and all sorts of things. But right now, when you cannot do nothing for the people in this society, in this climate as it is now, the people do not want you. What I'm saying to you, although it is true that people give out contracts to certain people and they might feel that if they don't toe the line with them that they will get dispersed, that is one thing. But the people that has the money, and I will say this now, 30, 40 years down the road, we would not have our color being the leaders in this country today. We see it happening, and it is happening because those people are getting wealth. And in getting this wealth, they are getting the power that they want. If you remember a few years ago with the controversy between the cement and whatever thing, you remember the workers came out and represented the hard cement person. Not for a fact that he committed to politics. People know already, he really might not become looking for this big salary because he got money already, like a number of them. But if he bring the policies that will benefit the lower man, especially his workers and these people, people are going to go for it. So this problem that people, for instance, Mr. Avili is the opposition leader. Has he been given his subvention yet? How you expect a person to operate in that? And he was right when he said that he history, remember, people in within the lower house of the upper hand, has worked to bear some of the deficiencies of this government. And we need to stop the foolishness and support these type of people, because at the end of the day, who you favor will get up, and who poor will become poor because of it. And I'm glad that this program really today is based off of this, because it hurts me to see that people are still being afraid of calling a spade in this country. And this is the head thing that this present government was telling people, that they want to be open and transparent. But yet, you would stifle people from explaining or expounding what their real views is for the betterment of this country. Thanks very much to your panel.
Thank you. Thank you, caller. Next caller, please. Brass Tack Sunday, come in, please.
Good morning, Green.
Good morning, sir.
I just want to come in here on this program because it's a very interesting program. First of all, let me say to you, there are a couple of things that are required by an average politician. The two things that are really required, personality and charisma. And personally, let's leave with Mr. Attlee first, right? He won his seat under the Barbados Labour Party. The PDP, as he said, have never won a seat in Barbados. And I dare to say to Mr. Attlee and his cohorts or whatever, even now, he mentioned he got two people in the lower house and one in the upper house or whatever. Two in the upper house and one in the lower house. The only person that really stands out in the PDP right now is Caswell Franklin. And personally, because of the fact that Caswell represents a union, and he's there fighting on behalf of his union, per se. And I dare say to tell Mr. Attlee that he will never, ever win a seat in Barbados. He can talk from now till the cows come home. He will never win a seat in Barbados. And I therefore...
Why do you say so? Why are you so adamant in that position?
Mr. Attlee don't possess the qualities, the personality, and the charisma that could win a seat on his own. It calls for a lot of personality in Barbados. Barbados is a small society.
Explain personality.
Okay, personality. Let's look at it. You got to be a person that with the people, that who the people respect and like, right? These are important. Let's look at Verla De Pisa. She's currently the president of
but, the Democratic Party. You're going from Mr. Attlee
to... Oh, no, I ain't shipping. Mr. Attlee, I can go back to Verla. Mr. Attlee came in the parliament under the Barbados Labour Party.
He crossed... And his own personality would have happened to win the seat. Agreed?
If he had a go on his own, Mr. Attlee would not have won that seat.
Well, that's speculation. Yeah, go ahead.
The people wanted the Barbados Labour Party, and he was part of the team, and he managed, and he came through. He saw the opportunity to become an opposition leader, and he took it. But yet, he's ranking...